So hello and welcome to the first episode of Respiratory Life, a new video and podcast brought to you by the European Respiratory Society Respiratory Channel. So this channel is now the main platform to access all of the ERS's digital resources, online events and learning material. Respiratory Life is going to be about respiratory medicine, but it's mostly going to be about what happens around respiratory medicine and how we as chest clinicians interact with each other, our patients and the world around us. I'm Brian Kent. I'm a respiratory and sleep physician at St. James's Hospital in Dublin, and I'm also the chief editor of Breathe, the clinical education journal of the European Respiratory Society. Laura, maybe you might introduce yourself.
I'm Laura Gleeson. I'm also a respiratory consultant in St. James's Hospital in Dublin and associate professor of respiratory medicine in Trinity Department of Clinical Medicine. Imran?
My name is Imran. I'm a respiratory consultant in Beaumont Hospital here in Dublin as well, with an interest in lung microbiome research.
I'm Breeda Cushion, and I'm also a respiratory consultant here in Dublin in Beaumont Hospital, and I'm an honorary senior lecturer in RCSI.
Well, thanks very much for being duped into doing this podcast, guys. We agreed before that for the first episode of this, we were going to talk about interactions between respiratory medicine and social media. Quite a lot has happened in the last few weeks when it comes to interactions between social media in general terms. And I suppose we should say that we're recording this in early November, and things may have changed quite a lot in the social media space by the time this podcast is eventually released. And there's probably an Elon-shaped elephant in the room that we need to address here. Imran, do you think there's still going to be a Twitter in a month's time?
Yeah, I think things will change on the platform, but I think it'll be hard to remove the behemoth that is Twitter. Like, for example, I've looked at the other options like Mastodon, and it really does not compare to what the reach that Twitter has. So I think it'll be impossible for it to go, but I think it'll probably be a little bit different than what we remember.
But is that assuming that there won't be a mass exodus of Twitter?
Yeah, and I think that's also unlikely because the base that Twitter has built over the years of it being there, it's going to be hard to replicate that from scratch, which is what some of the new platforms are trying to do, I think, anyway.
I thought we might get, before we really get into the meat of the discussion and talk about, you know, what sort of functions social media has when it comes to how we as medics use it, I thought we might just talk a little bit about our own personal usage of social media platforms, and particularly how that relates to your professional life. I mean, Laura, do you have a Twitter account?
I have a Twitter account, and it's something that I feel I should have, but I don't use it at all. I would consider myself a lurker. But there's a certain guilt that I have, or a certain kind of sense that I'm not making the most of it all the time. So I think it's an interesting thing to talk about today.
What kind of stuff? Do you post at all, or do you just follow other people?
I very rarely post.
Okay.
I retweet things that people ask me to retweet specifically, just as a favor for them. And I use it, I suppose, to just kind of take the temperature of what's going on.
Sure.
Most of the accounts I follow are medical.
Okay. Imran, I know for sure you have a Twitter account. I mean, what do you use it for? And does anyone pay any attention to what you have to say in it?
That's a good question. Probably not the latter point of your question, but yeah, I do have a Twitter account. I think I really got into Twitter through attending conferences, actually. And I found it really useful at conferences and networking, and also following talks or people that were giving talks. And then from then, I got really involved in it from a research point of view. So now I do tweet, but mostly what I tweet about is research-related stuff, specifically about research that I'm doing or collaborators are doing. So a little bit of self-promotion, I suppose, but it's meant to be educational.
Yeah, and Breeda, do you use your Twitter feed for professional stuff, or do you use it for life stuff?
So I'm a bit like Laura. So I have a Twitter account. I think I've had it for about 5 or 6 years. But really, I use it mostly a lot, actually, for kind of keeping up to date, seeing what I think it's useful for, what papers are released. So I kind of, I suppose, use the med Twitter. I like reading it. I don't contribute very much other than retweeting specific things that not that I've necessarily been asked to retweet, but things I suppose that are of interest to me or that I have connection to, I would retweet.
Okay. So by and large, people are using it mostly from a professional standpoint rather than a personal standpoint. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. And I think that's a good point that you bring up. Like, should we as physicians or professionals separate our professional and personal life on Twitter? I don't know what you guys thought on that.
It's interesting, actually. I don't have it. So if you go into my Twitter profile, it doesn't mention anywhere that I'm a doctor or like where I work, for example.
You're a true lurker then. Yeah.
Well, I set it up as kind of, as a personal account, I suppose, originally. But I suppose how I've been using it is more for the professional side of things in terms of keeping up to date and things.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because something I wanted to address was, is Twitter or other social media platforms, are they acceptable or usable forms for us to be interacting with patients and with the broader community? Any opinions?
I think we have to embrace social media a little. You know, there has to be kind of a hybrid approach to it. I mean, most people now have some sort of social media platform. So I think to engage with our patients, whether it's, you know, to let them know about research studies, say, or, recruiting for studies, our patients are using social media. So I do think
have any of you ever been approached by someone that you've been looking after, a patient you've been looking after on social media?
Not someone who I was looking after, but a patient reached out to me on Twitter looking to come to my service. So it was a patient that was living in the States that was moving to Ireland, that found me on Twitter and asked could they join my service when she moved over. That's the only direct interaction I've had with patients.
Yeah, and do you think it's something that should be, how should we handle that? If someone that you're looking after comes and finds you in social media and goes, hey doc, how are you doing? should you acknowledge that? Should you interact with them, or is there a blurring of boundaries there that is unprofessional to the doctor-patient relationship?
I don't know. That's a hard question, because like say for example, email. I don't know if your guys' email is publicly accessible, so patients can find you online and email you that way and contact you. Is that an acceptable way of communicating with a patient or a potential patient?
I think on an individual basis, if patients contacting you, I'd probably say, look, you know, here's my work contact details, yeah, or I'll arrange a meeting in my workplace. So I think engaging with individual patients, I wouldn't be comfortable with either.
Yeah, I guess I don't mind so much, because I think it's a good opportunity for patients who might be interested in research that I might be doing, that might want to get involved with it or be part of, a research study that I'm involved with.
But would you continue the engagement with them on that platform, or would you say
I'd say this is how you can contact, this is how we'll communicate going forward, that it wouldn't be primarily through Twitter or some other social media.
Can we talk a little bit about professional positives of Twitter? I feel like we've gone very quickly into the challenges that are associated with it. And I think we just, let's talk a little bit about potential upsides to using social media as a clinician.
Well, I suppose that's when I said at the beginning that I have this sense that I should be on Twitter. I feel like it has this role, like it helps with networking. It helps with keeping up to date. There's so much volume of like literature that comes out every day now. If you're following the right accounts, you can kind of, make sure that you have your finger on the pulse of what everyone else is reading and what everyone else is looking at. So I think there is this sense that being on Twitter is a good thing professionally, but how to make the most of it, I'm not sure of.
Do you guys use Twitter to keep on top of academic things? Do you use it to keep an eye on new data or studies coming out?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, particularly like in the lung microbiome field, there's a good few of us that tweet about our papers or potential projects that are going to happen. So it's definitely how I keep up to date in that field. But also we're all respiratory physicians that do a bit of general medicine. But one of the ways that I keep on top of my acute general medicine stuff is through Med Twitter. I mean, there's some really good ways of education through Twitter. I think tutorials. I don't know if you guys have read many tutorials. There's a couple of really good general internists in the States that do amazing tutorials on just kind of general stuff that we look after on day-to-day basis.
I think it is a really useful way of getting information out there and getting it out there reasonably quickly. You know, I mean, we've already touched about on COVID and how it kind of brought out the good and bad side of social media. But definitely one of the upsides of it was seeing some of the early, you know, particularly in the early stages of the pandemic where we had very little evidence for what we were doing, seeing things like data from the recovery trial, which really informed patient care. Most of the time, the first place I saw that, I don't know about you guys, but the first place I saw that was on Twitter. And that could potentially literally within minutes alter how we were treating patients. Like, you know, the dexamethasone arm of recovery, that day we changed how we were treating our patients. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, it can be a really, really positive force. Yeah. Awesome. But no one's interested in positivity, I tend to find. So let's talk a little bit about some of the negative sides of Twitter and how COVID maybe illustrated some of those, both in terms of COVID research and vaccination and that side of things. I mean, is there anything that jumps out to any of you guys about things that concerned you about Twitter when in the context of COVID?
Well, I suppose in the same way that we're saying, you know, all these like really impactful, important COVID research studies came out, at the same time, there was a lot of misinformation being put on Twitter and non-verified information. So that's anyone can post, and they can post anything that they want, whether it's true or not. So that certainly is a downside. And I think when you're reading Twitter, you have to be mindful of that, you know, that you of the source of the data, I suppose.
Going back to the whole tutorial thing, I mean, that's the caveat of it. It's not peer reviewed, right? It's somebody who did some research on some topic in medicine and posted about it as a way of educating people, but it's not peer reviewed at all. So you're taking it with a bit of a grain of salt, right?
Yeah, I think you kind of have to take almost a Bayesian approach to what you're reading. You have to look at people's bios and timelines to inform your priors, and kind of take it from there. Do you think dealing with the appearance of misinformation, do you think we should be trained in how to do that? Are there ways that we could approach doing that?
Do you mean misinformation specifically or social media?
I mean misinformation specifically, but maybe let's touch on the broader point there. I mean, because, you know, as medics, we have precisely zero professional training.
Yeah,
you learn on the job when it comes to social media. Do you think that some kind of teaching about use of social media should be incorporated into undergraduate and postgraduate medical curriculum?
I think probably now, yes, because it's such a big part of medicine now. Med Twitter is just so huge, and it is actually a way that a lot of medical students now learn. I think there's some college in the States, I can't remember, we might need to look this up later, that actually does a diploma or scholarship in social media. So you can do an online course on how to be better at social media, which I know a lot of medical students in the States actually subscribe to. If we're saying that we're talking specifically about a professional Twitter account as a physician, that there should be some guidance as to what is appropriate or not. I mean, obviously the big thing obviously that's not appropriate is patient information, which someone could easily accidentally tweet about or post a photo of them in a hospital where there's patients around or something. So there probably should be some guidance about that. I know in the States that most hospital institutions have their own social media department, which provide guidance to all employees as to how they should run their social media account, particularly if it's affiliated with the university or hospital, which I actually don't think is a bad idea.
I think even the Twitter question is interesting. I was at a conference in the summer, and I remember asking a question to a panel about whether or not they felt Twitter was necessary to do kind of medical research nowadays, and everyone on the panel thought it wasn't, and none of them had a Twitter. One person had a Twitter, but everyone in the audience who were all younger, everybody was on Twitter. So I feel like there's a disconnect generationally in terms of being on social media, and then maybe our generation is on Twitter mainly for medical reasons, and then the younger generation will use different platforms. And I think that's why it's even more important to have that kind of these guidelines as they are developed are going to be outdated really quickly.
Yeah.
And therefore, I think, I don't know, everyone needs to sort of see what feels right.
But do you not think the principles are going to be the same though? Is it not just kind of, look, these are maybe caveats of using these things or things that you should be conscious of if you're tweeting, particularly if you're tweeting in the role of, you know, I'm a doctor working in X place, that actually, you know, you have to be mindful that what you're tweeting could be seen to be representing the views maybe of the institution you work in. Yeah. Like, I think those sorts of principles would be the same no matter what platform.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're making a video on TikTok or whether you're putting up a tweet, I think it's going to, the principles are the same. There might be some nuances depending on what the platform will offer or allow you to do, but there is still a role to have kind of just like basic principles training.
Yeah.
And even though some of the professional bodies might have, I actually don't know if our professional body have it, because I'd actually have to go and look it up. It's not encouraged that we, you know, if you have a social media account that you should, you know, go through this little bit of training or watch this video or anything like that. Yeah. Maybe they need to be a bit more proactive in making us do that.
Yeah.
Or encouraging us to do it.
I'm really surprised that, sorry to go back to your point about none of your staff having Twitter or using Twitter. And then also a little bit surprised that, see, at a conference, none of them thought Twitter was useful for medicine or...
I'm not that surprised, really, because I remember, and I'm showing my age now, but when we were in college, we had a Bebo account, which I'm sure most people listening have never even heard of. And then we were all on Facebook for a while. And I still have a Facebook account, but I never use it. But there was a period of time where that was the main way of communicating with people. And now it's kind of evolved into Twitter. So even in that period of time, you know, the kind of main platform that I've been using has changed. So I suppose it's not surprising that the years below me, as a generation below me, are using others.
I think from for personal accounts, definitely what happens is generationally it'll change because no one wants to be on the same platform that their parents are on, basically. So it'll always be a new one.
Yeah, I get Instagram and TikTok for personal reasons, but for medical reasons, not being on Twitter, it's just very surprising.
Do they use it though is it more personal stuff or do they interact with it for like education and
in terms of Instagram and TikTok? No, it's mainly personal stuff. I'm not sure that we've moved anything really from a medical professional point of view onto those platforms yet.
Yeah.
But as you say, I mean, things will evolve. And I agree with you, Breida. I think the principles of how people handle themselves and conduct themselves in those situations probably remain fairly consistent with what we've discussed.
But I think we don't know. Like, I mean, we don't have an answer to what those principles should be. You know, we're saying, is it better that you show a personal side and let people see that you're human? Or is it better that you keep everything extremely professional? You know, do you interact with people? Do you not? There's
an awful lot of gray areas, but there's obviously also certain things that have a clear red flag, you know, like identifiable patient details is an obvious thing. Swearing at colleagues online is probably bad, as just as it is in person.
Yeah.
Actually, speaking of identifiable patient details, you've used the phrase med Twitter a fair bit, and I'm always really struck by the transatlantic differences in approach to what med Twitter involves. And a lot of the North American stuff, I think in Europe, we are less likely to foreground patient details, but it seems to be more of something that you might expect to see on North American med Twitter. Am I just imagining that? Did I hallucinate that in a fever dream?
I don't know if I've noticed that, to be honest. People do post patient information, but they only do it after getting consent. And that's a pretty strict thing with any institution, obviously. And I've seen a few people who've posted cases with a little bit of patient information, and it's all after consent though.
Yeah.
But I guess like my med Twitter feed is very much North American based. So I don't get that much of the European side of things. I don't know.
But I mean, going back to some of the very positive aspects about it in the educational content, do we think that Twitter stuff or social media in general terms, should it be CV-able? You know, some people really invest time and effort in this and bring a lot of, you know, bring a lot of education to people. You know, how do you capture that in your CV? You know, it's easy. You know, if we publish a paper, that's easy. It appears on PubMed and we stick it on our CV and everyone's all very happy. Or if you get a grant or if you, you know, you're working in faculty and education in such a place, then that's all stuff that's very straightforward conceptually to capture. But what about, you know, social media? Is that something that we should be allowed to put down our CVs?
Well, I mean, most people would have like public outreach on their CV as part of the CV. So I guess, you know, you can put your Twitter metrics and, you know, followers and things like that. But again, I feel like that just shows that you're good at, you know, being popular. Like, does that, I mean, a good example is not a Twitter example, but you know, the Dr. Oz show in America.
Yeah.
This concept of like somebody who is a doctor coming out and saying things that are not necessarily, but like, you know, he is good at being popular and therefore he has an enormous reach.
We all have public engagement profiles on our CV. Well, I don't, but I you don't. Know, you cool kids probably do. But you know, okay, it's one thing to go, I have a Twitter handle and I have X number of followers, but that doesn't capture the breadth of work some of these people have done. Like I got loads of followers just by mouthing off about COVID, but you know, these other people have actually worked to get it.
That's the problem. That's what I mean, that like you can say you have this many followers, but you got them by, now, sorry, I'm just hypothesizing here, but like, you know, you can get them by just mouthing off and saying something extreme and then everyone starts following you, or you can get them by putting a lot of work in and creating really good content. So yeah, that's why, I mean, the reach that you have and the voice that you have isn't always reflective of the reach and the voice that you deserve to have.
I'm sure
you deserved your voice.
So I'm sure I did.
So do you think it's important then? Like, is it an important thing to have? If you saw it on someone's CV, do you think like that person is a stronger candidate than the somebody who
If I saw it on someone's CV, I'd definitely go look at their Twitter profile and look at what they've
done. Yeah, that could be a double-edged sword, couldn't it? I mean, that could go either way. So, I mean, I think we've established that there are clear answers to very few aspects of this. Yeah. I know what the answer to this is going to be, but I mean, are you all going to continue engaging with social media as a medical education and engagement tool?
For education, for my education purposes, yes. But the role of a medic, apart from furthering their own education in terms of like reaching other people, providing education, particularly to the public, I don't know what the answer to that question is. But I think somebody has to be out there putting out reliable information, because there is a huge amount of misinformation and it has to be addressed and countered and balanced.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to continue using Twitter for both my education from a clinical point of view, from a research point of view, and then also promoting research and advertising research as well, I suppose.
Yeah,
I found it really useful, particularly in the last 4 years, I guess, that I've been using it more than I have previously.
And do you think the future of medical social media mainly lies in education or in advocacy or in a mixture of both?
I would say a picture of both. Yeah. I think it's probably a little bit easier to, from an education point of view, because there's pretty good avenues of how to use it. The advocacy bit is a little bit grayer, I think, but I think both are good.
The other thing that I think is something that might become an issue that we need to be aware of is like MedTwitter has become such a big thing now that there are going to be people trying to use it in a nefarious way, you know, like pharmaceutical companies trying to use it as an advertising base. You know, there's no, you know, if you do a talk at a conference, you know, you say what your disclosures are at the beginning, but that's not required on Twitter, you know, so people could be accepting money from drug companies to promote something. I think there's a huge round of kind of unknowns. And that's just one thing that I could think of that may be an issue that we need to be aware of. But I'm sure there's so many others
Yeah. I think that's a good place to leave things. So thank you very much, guys. And thank you all for listening and or watching us on the ERS Respiratory channel. Future episodes, if they let us record any of Respiratory Life, will appear on this channel or wherever you find your podcasts. So thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you, Breida.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Imran.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you all. Goodbye.